I will say from Yerushalayim, Erev Tov. It's 8 p.m. and good afternoon, Tzaraim Tovim for those on the East Coast and elsewhere. You know, the idea of re-experiencing the Rav's Hanukkah. So I'm going to admit that I was never in Boston for Hanukkah with the Rav, so I can't tell you anything specific about the Rav's activity in lighting candles. The only thing I have is what he talked about in Shiur. For example, he spoke about candles. He spoke about candles and not using oil. And we had a guest in the Shiur who asked, but Rebbe, isn't it a preferred option to use oil? And the Rav's response was, in a very, very practical way, that he had dexterity issues with his fingers, and the oil, he was not able to handle it properly, and he just did better with the candles. And I'm not sure that that guest was prepared to get that kind of a practical response, but that's the way the Rav was, and so on. But we're going to see something else about something I did know about the Rav, because he was in New York City during the weekdays, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when he gave shiurim at the Yitzchak Hanan Yeshiva of Yeshiva University. And he did not have a Hanukkah menorah. The idea that we use a menorah, or as we call it in Hebrew in Israel, a Chanukiah, is something that the Jewish artist, the world of Judaica, introduced. Chazal never spoke about the fact that you have to have a menorah. They spoke about the fact that you have to light candles. And the Rav used to have a piece of silver foil next to the windowsill, and he used to melt in Shabbos candles. And in a moment, we'll see why Shabbos candles. Shabbos candles would give you at least an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of a candlelight, when most of us would buy these boxes of 44 candles, and each candle would give you about 35 minutes, which would be a few minutes over the requisite, and I'll say in brackets, holy 30-minute time framework. And we'll see in a moment where that came from. And indeed, through the Shiurim of the Rav, we got a picture, we had a take on what the Rav's Hanukkah experience was in lighting candles. So I'm going to put up some sources here to work with. Okay, and in this particular topic, we're going to have to immediately digress to a completely different area of halacha and see how a certain intermingling of halachic topics play an interesting role in formulating a particular halacha. We know that Hanukkah is found in the Shulchan Aruch and the tail end of Or HaChaim, that section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with ritual, with davening, with Kriyat Shema and Tfilah, and then with the Chagim, with Shabbat, and all the Chagim one after the other, according to the schedule of the calendar from Nisan all the way until Adar. And that's why in Shulchan Aruch, the laws of Hanukkah precede the laws of Purim, even though historically it was just the other way around. That's a trick question we used to ask students moving from sixth grade to seventh grade to junior high school in their admissions test. And we'd ask, what came first, Hanukkah or Purim? And 80% of them would say Hanukkah came first. And the reason they said Hanukkah came first is because Hanukkah is in December, it's in Kislev, and Purim is a little bit later in the year. Of course, that's not true. The story of Hanukkah, it came after the story of Purim. Purim is between the first and second Beit HaMikdash, and Hanukkah is deep into the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. But in the sequence of Shulchan Aruch, you have Hanukkah, the Chagim of Kislev, coming before the Chagim of Adar, which is Purim. So that's one section of Shulchan Aruch. But then you have the second section, and that's the Yoredeya. And that's what's called Issa V'Heter, that which is prohibited and permissible, which people studying for Smicha will go to yeshiva and study sections of the Yoredeya. Among other things, basar v'chalav, meat and milk. And I can tell you from the practical rabbinate side, until this very day, I receive questions about meat and milk issues, kitchen questions about basar v'chalav, and it's certainly an area of halacha that a rabbi has to develop some type of expertise when he's in the field in the rabbinate. So what could be a connection between mixing meat and milk with Hanukkah candles? So let's take a step back into understanding that the world of Sheilot u'Tshuvot, responsa literature, is a very, very important source for history. Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik dedicated his life professionally to discussing can halachic text talk history. And using the Sheilot u'Tshuvot, the responsa literature of the Middle Ages, you can fairly accurately reconstruct that which the Jewish communities were going through. But you don't have to go to the Middle Ages for this. If you take, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein's Igrot Moshe, which were written in the latter half of the 20th century, all you have to do is read the questions, and you can somehow put together how life, what was life all about in the modern Orthodox scene in the United States. You can, I say modern Orthodox, I mean Orthodoxy in the modern era. Orthodoxy in the modern era, what kind of life did they live? What did they do? Questions that obviously the Noda Behuda in Prague 250 years ago and the Chatam Sofer, they would never have to deal with dishwashers and kashering them from meat to milk and for Pesach and so on. Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with all this. He deals with bungalow colony issues, which many of us in the 20th century, in the 50s and 60s, perhaps even in the 70s, would still go to these bungalow colonies, and they all kinds of shilas came up. You can see the questions of Rav Moshe Feinstein and draw conclusions about society, about Jewish life in this particular era. Once upon a time, people recycle. Today we try to recycle. Today we fill up garbage bags. But once upon a time, if something could be reused for something else, it was reused for something else. So they didn't have electricity. And you know very well that in order to illuminate the house, you have to have some type of fuel to create a candle situation. Now, what if somebody fried something in his kitchen, whatever the frying may have been, and after the food was taken out, so the oil may congeal. And that congealed oil can be scraped out of the pot or pan and placed into a lantern and put a wick inside and ignite it, push it, light it up, and you can now use this lamp for a few hours of home illumination. This is something that was commonly done. The question that came up in a responsum in the book called the Tshuvot of the Shah Ephraim, in source number one, was the following. A person cooked meat and basically fried meat. He had and didn't use oil, but used butter. In those days, there was no such thing called margarine. He used butter inadvertently, but he didn't really cook meat in it. That for sure wasn't the case. The case was that the pot or pan that was used was a bisari, fleshig pot or pan that was used for hot bisari, fleshig, within the last 24 hours. As we call it, a kli ben yomo. So it has the status of meat, even though there's no meat in it, but for 24 hours after meat was cooked in a particular pot, the flavor of the meat is embedded in the walls of the vessel, and therefore it's as if the flavor is the meat itself. And therefore, if within the 24 hours you fry something with good old dairy butter, so you have created basar b'chalav. You have cooked meat and milk, even though the milk might be there in the butter and the meat is not tangible, but the meat flavoring within the 24 hours embedded in the pan or the pot is considered as if it's meat. You have created a basar b'chalav, a meat-milk situation. And a meat-milk situation is forbidden to have any benefit. Not only are you not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to have any derive any benefit from it. And therefore, says the Shah Ephraim, that Shepasak, who we ruled, b'chem'ah shenitbashla b'kdera shel basar ben yomo, that there was butter that was cooked in a pot that was a meat pot within 24 hours of its being a meat gender, asur lahadlik ba lehair habayit mitam sha'asur bana'a. You would not be allowed to use that congealed fat of the butter to put a wick in and then to illuminate the house, because in that case, you would be deriving benefit from a cooked product of meat and milk. So this is an example of asur bahana'a. It's forbidden to derive benefit from the cooked product of meat and milk. That's pretty understandable. But then he continues and says, v'gam lahadlik ba ner Chanukah. You would not allow to use that kind of a candle for purposes of performing the mitzvah of lighting a Chanukah candle. Now the question is, why would you think that you could use it? In other words, for a posek to come out and say, v'gam lahadlik ba ner Chanukah, you also are forbidden to use it, because there's a thought that may creep into the mind that it's actually permissible. Why? Because there's a concept called mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. The mitzvot were not given so that we should enjoy the mitzvah. If a person happens to enjoy the mitzvah, that's not a sin. It's not a crime. It's not an avera. But the purpose that the mitzvah was given was not that we should enjoy it. The purpose was that we should fulfill the word of God. And whether the word of God is a biblical command or whether it's rabbinic, but behind every rabbinic command stands a biblical command of following the ways of the Chachamim, as the Gemara tells us that the reason that we say a bracha on the candle lighting, which is clearly a rabbinic institution, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotah vitzivanu, we've been commanded. Where do you see in the Torah we were commanded to light Hanukkah candles or to read the Megillah on Purim or many other rabbinic mitzvot that we say a bracha vitzivanu? So the Gemara says, lo tasur min adavar asher yagidu lecha yamin usmol. The Torah says, do not deviate from what the Chachamim have said. And they give another pasuk, sha'al avicha v'yagetcha zikenecha v'yomulach. Listen to the elders. And because of the mitzvah, lishmo ledivrei chachamim, to listen and take heed of the words of our chachamim, that's the mitzvah. So that's why we do the mitzvah, not because we enjoy. Some people say, why? I enjoy listening to the Megillah. I enjoy the lighting candles. That's your case, but that's not the purpose of the mitzvah. And because the mitzvah is lav lehenot nitnu, you may think that you would be able to use this congealed butter that was cooked in a pot that was meat within the last 24 hours. So for purpose of home illumination, that's a clear benefit, hana'ah, that's forbidden. But if it was for a mitzvah, perhaps it would be permissible. So the Shaar Ephraim says that even for Ner Chanukah, it's also forbidden after mitzvot lav lenot edno, in spite of the fact that we do not have the mitzvah for purposes of having benefit, mikol makom asur, nevertheless it's forbidden. Why? Because there's another consideration that has to be taken into account. Kevan debener Chanukah ba'i shi'ur. Ner Chanukah has a minimum quantitative value to it. And we'll just jump for a second and say that the candle has to burn for half an hour. And for a candle burning half an hour, that means there has to be enough filament, there has to be enough oil, or the candle must be thick enough with enough wax to give you that shi'ur, that minimum quantitative value. And if that's the case, if Ner Chanukah has a minimum quantitative value, ubebasar b'chalav, with regard to the prohibition of meat and milk, kevan she'asur b'hana'a, because it's forbidden to derive any benefit, and here comes some phrase, we're going to have to define it, kitute michtet shi'ura. The minimum quantity is squashed and doesn't exist. What does that mean? So we're just going to hold our fingers on this line and jump to source number two. Source number two is a story about taking a lulav on Sukkot from a tree, a palm tree, that was used for the purposes of idolatry. And that's known as an asherah. And the Torah tells us in Parshat Re'eh, asherehem tisrufun ba'esh, when you get to Eretz Canaan and you're going to see these palm trees that the locals use for idolatrous purposes, you must burn them down. And that's it. You must burn them. So if you take a lulav from a palm tree that was used as idolatry purposes, that's called an asherah, or a lulav from Ir HaNidachat, that's a city that most of the majority of the population moved over were convinced to move over to idolatrous a lifestyle. So and there may be a palm tree that have grown there. The Torah tells us that we have to destroy that city. Nothing should be left over, but it should, that place should be blotted out and eradicated from the map. Just to put people at ease, the Tosefta and Masechet Sanhedrin tells us there never was an Ir Hanidachat. So it's another theoretical type of mitzvah, like Ben Soreh Umoreh, but we learn much from it, but in practice it just didn't happen. But here we're talking about two cases of a lulav that either came from a palm tree that was used for idolatrous purposes, or a lulav that came from a palm tree of a city that's defined as Ir Nidachat, that everybody had to, everything had to be destroyed there. So the Gemara says there, Vishel Ashira Pasul, is it true that a lulav from a, that came from a palm tree that was used for idolatry is disqualified? V'amar Rava, Rava said, lulav shel avodah zarah lo yitol. If the lulav was something that was used for idolatry, the lulav itself was used as an object of a deity, don't take this for the mitzvah. But im natal, if that's what you did with it, kasher, you fulfilled your obligation. So it seems to contradict that which the Mishnah says in Masechet Sukkah, that if you take the lulav from the Ashira or Eridachat, it's disqualified. Yet the Amora Rava seems to suggest that if the very lulav was used for an object of idolatry, you shouldn't use it, but if you did use it, it's not the end of the world and you fulfill your mitzvah. So my response to this, Hacha be'asherah de Moshe Askinan. We're talking about the Asherah of Parshat Re'eh, where there the Torah says that Asherehen tisrefun ba'esh, you must necessarily burn it. The ketute michtit shi'ureha, that means that the quantitative value is actually crunched together. Now let's get this right. The minimum height of a lulav is 4 tfachim. It's not exactly a big measure, but it's 4 tfachim. What happens if somebody burns a lulav? It all becomes ashes. And ashes, you can crumple into the palm of your hand. So what's actually missing from the from this lulav of an asherah is the quantitative value, because I don't have 4 tfachim worth of lulav anymore if it's all crushed into the hand. And the Gemara says, one second, but I didn't burn it. If I burn it, it becomes ashes, I can crush it into the hand. But the Gemara whips out an interesting concept, kol ha'omed lisaref kisaruf, something that's on its way to be burnt from a halachic point of view, is considered burnt already. So even though this lulav was not burnt at all, it's considered as if it's ashes. And if it would be ashes, it could be crunched together in the palm of my hand. So what's missing is the 4 tfachim's worth, the minimum quantitative value. That's the concept ktute michtet shiureha. And now I go back to our congealed fat from the butter that was cooked or fried in a meat pot or pan within 24 hours. And the Bashar Ephraim says, not only can you not use the that fat to light up the house, to use it as home lighting, illumination. Not only can you think you might be able to use it as a Ner Chanukah, because mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu, we don't have hana'ah, we don't have benefit from the mitzvah, so what's the difference if it's asur b'hana'ah, prohibited from benefit? But, he says, there's another consideration, and because basar b'chalav is forbidden from hana'ah, kitute michtet shiura, it has to be burnt, it has to be destroyed. And if you burn and destroy the basar b'chalav, the cooked meat and milk product, whatever it might be, you do not have a minimum quantitative value left, and hence that kind of a candle would be disqualified for Hanukkah. That's the line that the Shaar Ephraim takes. But then there's another posek called the Pri Megadim, and he quotes the Shaar Ephraim as saying, that's not the case, but Ner Chanukah Shari, you actually can use it for Ner Chanukah. Now you may ask me, what am I bothering with this? Nobody today fries butter in such a pot that's going to lead to the Shaila of an Ner Chanukah. Today, not so, you're right. But maybe 300 years ago, this was a shaila. But we're going to see that through this shaila, something important comes out. Even though the in the Shulchan Aruch it says that this quote from the Pri Megadim, that the Ner Chanukah Shari, that maybe it would still be permissible. And the question is, why would it be permissible when the Shaar Ephraim actually made a case why it's prohibited to use because of Ktuta Michta Shira? Why in the world would we consider the possibility that this candle, this filament, this congealed fat could be used for a kosher Chanukah candle? The follow-up here is ubemchilat kvodo ki lo eyein sham heitev, that the word is that the Shaar Ephraim never really said that it's permissible. He always said that it's forbidden. But apparently there was such a view out there that this kind of a situation could lead to a psak that it is permissible to use that kind of a candle. So let's just sum up right now what we have is two possibilities. One possibility that you cannot use this candle, and the reason is because of Ktuta Michta Shiura. And the second possibility is you can use this candle because the issue of Ktuta Michta Shiura is not relevant. And if we prove that it's not relevant, what we're left with is mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. You cannot derive benefit from a mitzvah. We do not derive benefit from mitzvah. The mitzvah was not given to derive benefit, and hence we would be able to use this forbidden congealed butter as a candle for Ner Chanukah. For home illumination, no, but for Ner Chanukah, for a mitzvah, yes. And let's see how this pans out when we get now to the sources of Chanukah. Source number three. The Gemara says, has a discussion, if you light your Chanukah candles and it blows out, you had a perfectly good candle, it would have gone the distance of more than a half an hour. But somebody opened up a different window, somebody opened up a door, and a breeze just blew out your candle. Do you have to rekindle the candle? That's what the Gemara asked the question. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that kafta, if the candle was extinguished, not that you did it, but it happened, ein zakukla, there's no need for you to go and relight the candle. So the Gemara questions this. Viraminu. There's a braita that says, mitzvata, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, commences mishe tishka hachama, from sundown, ad shetichle regel min hashuk, until people have left the marketplace, which translated loosely, until there are no longer people on the street. And this you have to understand, in the days of Chazal, when people came back from the marketplace, that means nobody was on the street and people did not walk around. The place was pitch black, and pitch black means it's dangerous and people were indoors. It's as simple as that. The question is, what does mitishka hachama when sun sets? So Rambam, I'm just going to jump to source number 7. Rambam says, ein madlikim nerot Chanukah, we do not light Chanukah candles, kodem shetishka hachama, before sundown, ela im shkiata, with sundown, lo ma'acharim velo makdimim, not too early, not too late. But you have to really focus on the moment of sundown as the very, very first moment for candle lighting. This is sundown. And it's interesting, you may think this is a little bit strange, because in most of the world and in many communities in Eretz Israel, we do not light candles with sundown, but we wait until Tzeta Kochavim, the stars have appeared, and that's why people who go to shul come back after Ma'ariv, and that's when they light Hanukkah candles at home, and that's way after sundown, at least 20 minutes after sundown. And the reason is because in Shulchan Aruch, in source number 5, it begins, Ein madlikim ner Chanukah kodem shetishka chama. That seems to be a quote, word for word, from the Rambam. You do not light Chanukah candles before sundown. Ela im sof shkiata. Rabbi Yosef Karo adds these four words. But when do you light candles? At the end of the sundown period. And the Mishnah Berurah says that this is Tzeta Kochavim. So that's at least 20 minutes, at least, after the astronomical sundown. And that's when most people light the candles. And then he continues with the quote from the Rambam, Lo macharim v'lo makdimim. We don't delay. We don't bring it earlier. But then he adds something that the Rambam does not have. V'yesh misha omer, and there are those who say shimu tarud, if he's very busy, yochol lahakdim miplaga mincha ulemala. He actually can light Hanukkah candles earlier than sundown, which is approximately an hour and a quarter before sundown. Provided that the candle has sufficient amount of oil, or if it's a candle that's thick enough, that's going to remain lit until people have left the market, or in our language, people are off the street. And therefore, there's no sense to light candles opposite the door or the window if there's just nobody out there anymore. The public view of the Hanukkah candles is an integral part of the mitzvah, pirsum hanes, to publicize the miracle. And that's why the boundary, the limitation is tichla rega min hashuk, the people have left the marketplace. So we have here two views, whether the optimum time to light Hanukkah candles is from sundown, which is the Rambam, or the end of sundown, which is tzeta kochavim, which is the opinion of most of the world. And the only one who really picked up on the view of the Rambam was the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon and his students who came to Eretz Yisrael, specifically to Yerushalayim, brought this particular view of the Rambam to Yerushalayim. And that's why many people in Yerushalayim, as we do in my house, we light Hanukkah candles from astronomical sundown. Whatever it reads on the calendar as sundown, that's the time that we light Hanukkah candles before we daven Maariv every single day. But most people outside Yerushalayim and throughout the world light Hanukkah candles from Shkia, from the end of Sof Shkia, the end of sundown. Now, the Rav Zichron Lebracha, whose traditions from Brisk and Volozhin hailed from the views of the Vilna Gaon. So even though he was a person who lived in Boston and spent some of his evenings in New York City during Hanukkah, he lit Hanukkah candles from sundown, astronomical sundown, in accordance with the view of the Rambam. And not only that, but the Rav believed that Tichla Regel Min Ashuk, as the Rambam will tell us, is approximately a half an hour. Let's read it. The Rambam says, Shachach O Hizid, if you forgot or even deliberately, V'lo hidlik im shkiyat hachamah, you did not light candles with sundown. Well, you ought to light. You better get to it. You better attend to it as soon as you can. Madlik v'holech ad she'tich l'regel min hashuk. You just have that amount of time left until there's nobody out there. Because according to the Rambam, if there's nobody out in the street, well, there's no more mitzvah. There's no more mitzvah. And we'll see you tomorrow night and try again. But there's no such animal as lighting Hanukkah candles, according to the Rambam, at 10:30 at night or 11 o'clock at night, because there's nobody out there. And the Rambam says, you just have the time until Tichle Regel Min Hashuk, until people have left the market. That means they've come home from work and nobody's out on the street. How long is that time? So, Kamahu Zman Ze, Kimo Chatzi Sha'a O Yeter. It's about a half an hour. Now, the Rambam is not telling us something, halacha le Moshe mi Sinai, that this is, you know, a tradition for Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam is looking in Egypt in the 12th century, and he's saying that about a half hour after sundown, nobody's out there any longer, and it's not like a half hour on a stopwatch, but it's about a half an hour. It was an estimation. It's about kimo. He doesn't say chatzi shah. He says kimo chatzi shah, approximately a half hour, perhaps a little bit more, or yeter. You know, you just have to estimate and you figure, you know, one day it's going to be 35 minutes, one day it's going to be 40 minutes, one day it might be 25 minutes, whatever it is, it's roughly a half hour. Avar zman zeh, once you pass this time, according to the Rambam, and there's nobody out there on the street, ain't no madlik, you just don't light anymore. Finish. You've done, you cannot perform the mitzvah any longer that evening. Now, because the Rav felt that Tichle Regel Min Hashuk, the Rambam does not put his foot down and say it's a half an hour. But he says it's about a half an hour, perhaps a little bit more, which means the Rambam judged by his local situation. And the Rav said, let me judge in my local situation. In New York City, rush hour is approximately from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. I mean, that everybody in New York City knows. When you ride the subways, when you travel on the highways, those are the heavy traffic hours, which means people are coming home from work. Tichle regel min hashuk. They're coming home from work during those two-hour period after sundown. And therefore, the Rav felt that in New York City, we should be lighting Hanukkah candles, that the duration of the candles should be at least 2 hours after sundown. And then the Rav started speculating. But one second, people get home, and then at 8 o'clock at night, there's theater hours. This is the Rav said in the shir. There's theater hours. People go out for entertainment. And what time do they come home? 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever. I mean, who are we kidding? In there are cities where people come home at late hours. You can expect to see some people on the street. You don't have to have hordes of people out there, but as long as some people out there, that's good enough to allow for Hanukkah candles to be lit. And the Rav said, we don't have to take the entertainment crowd into consideration here. Chazal spoke about tichle regel min hashuk, people coming home from the market, from wherever they had to buy things, consumers who had to buy things, shoppers, or people coming home from work, whatever it is, that's what we have to take into consideration. And because of that, the Rav felt that if you're going to use oil, you have to have a significant amount of oil that's going to give you about 2 hours worth of light. And if it's going to be a candle, it should be essentially a Shabbos candle, which gives you more than 2 hours worth of light. Now, again, the Rav didn't give an absolute psak and say, this is what everybody should do. He never went to the Rabbinical Council of America with a definitive psak halacha to change the course of Hanukkah candles from the thin 44 candles in the box that give you 30, 35 minutes. He never said that. He understood that the Am Yisrael has taken upon itself its 30 minutes, and we'll see in a minute why and what basis. But he said, if you seriously consider the Rambam's point of view, then the 30 minutes is not an absolute, but it's rather the duration of time that people are out on the street, so that you can still fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles by publicizing the miracle to them. So now we're going to get back to the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat in source number 3. The Gemara said, "V'kavta ein zakukla." You want to tell me that if the candle burnt out, you do not have to relight it? V'raminu, we can ask the following question. There's a braita that says, "Mitzvata mishe tishkah hachama." And now I'm just going to add parentheses. According to the Rambam, it's sundown. According to Rabbi Yosef Karo and Shulchan Aruch, it's Seta Kochavim, the appearance of the stars, or as he calls it, Sof Shkiata, the end of the sundown. Ad shetichle regel min hashuk. My love, most probably this means the ikafta, if the candle burnt out, as a hadar madlikla, you have to go and relight it. That's what it seems to be. So how can you tell me kafta ein zakukla, if it burns out, if it blows out, you don't have to relight it? There seems to be an impression created in this braita that the candles have to be until tichla vega min hashuk. And obviously, if it blew out, go relight it. So Gemara says, no, your understanding is incorrect. What this line comes to teach us is one of two things. The e lo adlik, if I did not yet light from sundown, I still have until tichle regel min hashuk, until the last person is off the street. The e lo adlik, if I didn't light it, so madlik, so go light until tichle regel min hashuk. That's one answer. And the other answer is, inami, another answer, that defines the shi'ur, a minimum quantitative value of how long a Hanukkah candle has to burn. You can't use a birthday cake candle that gives you 5 minutes of light. You have to use a candle that's going to give you at least the amount of time of a flame that would be the zman, the time of from sundown until tichle regel min hashuk, even if you light some later, at some later hour. There has to be a shi'ur. And that's what the Gemara says here. And just parenthetically, you can add a nice thought from the Rav. Ad shetichle regel min hashuk, until the last person leaves the shuk, ba'ad kama. So how long is that? So the Gemara doesn't say half hour. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabba Bar Bachana, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, says, Ad chalya rigla de tarmudai, until their feet of the Tarmudaim. Who are the Tarmudaim? They are Persians, they're Goyim, who actually were the people in the home heating wood business. And they would be the last ones really to leave the marketplace. because when people did their shopping and they came home and it's winter, it's cold in the month of Kislev in the English calendar of December in some cities, like in Toronto, and they come home and they find that the supply of wood for home heating was low. They rush back to the marketplace, to these Tarmudaim, and pick up a few logs so they can warm up their homes. So when these goyim close their shop, then you can rest assured nobody's out there. Nobody's out there. They're the last ones to go. And the Rav said, this means that as long as those goyim are out on the street, there's something for us to light and publicize, not only to the Jewish people, but we are also publicizing the Hanukkah story to the non-Jewish audience out there. And the Rav made a distinction between the Pirsumanes, publicizing a miracle for Hanukkah and for Pesach and Purim, where the drinking of the four cups is also called Pirsume Nisa, publicizing a miracle, and the reading of the Megillah is also called Pirsume Nisa. We say the Bracha Sha'asa Nisim Labotenu Bayamim Mahem Bazman Hazeh before we read the Megillah. The Rav said the difference is that with Pesach and Purim, the Pirsumanes is for domestic consumption only, for internal consumption only. It's for Am Yisrael. We're talking to ourselves. We're reminding ourselves about that miracle, but we don't go public with it. Hanukkah, the minute the Chachamim said you should light by the door or the main entrance of the house or by the window opposite public domain, we're automatically saying that the non-Jewish world is part of this concept of Pirsumanes, because you can't say that we're lighting Hanukkah candles so when Jewish people pass by, they'll take a look and they'll gaze at it and they'll have the message. And we know that if a person is homeless, the Gemara says that he just sees the Hanukkah candle by somebody, he says the bracha she'asa nisim labotenu bayamim ahem bazman hazeh. So it's, but it's not just for Jewish consumption. It's for everybody. And the Rav proves it from this line, adechalya rigla de tarmudaim. So these tarmudaim, these Persians who worked the booths at the shuk, at the market, selling the home heating wood, would leave the marketplace. They are really the last ones on the street. And that's the measure of tichla regel min hashuk. So the Gemara here tells us two things, that nishatishta chama ad shetichla regel min hashuk could either mean that you should light from sundown. But let's assume sundown, for argument's sake, is 5 p.m. It's going to make this easier to use round numbers. 5 p.m. And tichla regel min hashuk, let's say it's 30 minutes. We'll say until 5:30, right? So at 5 o'clock, you should be lighting. How long is your candle going to be lit? For 30 minutes. But if you did not light at 5 p.m., but you lit at 10 after 5, why? Because you were busy on a long-distance phone call and you just didn't attend to it, and now it's 10 after 5. So according to this view, you now light at 10 after 5 until 5:30, which means your candle is only going to be 20 minutes. And if you light at 5:15, your candle is only going to be 15 minutes. And if you light at 5:25, your candle is going to be 5 minutes. This is exactly what the Rambam says here. The Rambam says, Shachach o hizid, if you forgot or even deliberate, and you did not light with sundown, you light madlik meholech ad shetich l'regel min hashuk. You light until that time. And it's about a half an hour, but you light from the moment that you caught yourself after sundown. Avar zman zeh eino madlik. If it's after the zman of tich l'regel min hashuk, 5:30 in the illustration that I just gave, there's nothing to be said about Hanukkah candles if there's nobody out there any longer. So that's the Rambam's opinion. However, there's another opinion, and that is to see the concept of tishka regel min chama min or achetich regel min hashuk as a shiur, as a minimum quantitative value. And if that's the case, then you might be able to, under certain circumstances, light after people are no longer on the street, but you're lighting indoors for your family, and then that could be done at 8 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 11 p.m. No matter when you light the candles, it's going to have to burn the amount of time, theoretically, of Tishka Chama from sundown at Shetich L'Regel Min Hashuk. If we're now calling the shots as half an hour, so it's going to have to burn from 9 to 9:30, or from 10:30 to 11, and so on. And that means that the candle has to be thick enough. The amount of oil has to be sufficient enough to give me the minimum requisite time of the shi'ur. In essence, what we have here as the Rav explained many times, a classic brisk, and I'm saying brisk not in the word brisk strong, but in the brisk style of lamdanut, of splitting between two different facets of a mitzvah. What's called in the language that the Rav's grandfather would use all the time, the gavra and the cheftza. Gavra means the person, cheftza means the object. And many times we can split a particular halakha between its subjective side to it, which reflects upon a particular person doing the mitzvah, or the objective side to it, which is the object of the mitzvah. And here, the Gemara itself, by suggesting two answers, di adlik madlik, or l'shi'ura, is basically saying that according to the first answer, the half, the tishka chama ad shetech l'rega min ashuk, is a halakha in the person who's doing the lighting. Or translate that into brisk language, it's a halakha in the gavra. The person is involved here. He can light from the maximum. His maximum might be a half hour. His maximum might be 25 minutes. His maximum might only be 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes or perhaps even 1 minute, because it's determined by what time he actually lit the candles from sundown, and it ends at the same time. That's a constant. The only thing that's not a constant is when exactly did he light. So that's not measured by the thickness of a candle or the amount of oil. Because clearly, for one person to light at sundown and have an amount of oil that's going to give him tichla v'yom ha'shuk, let's say 30 minutes, the next guy's going to light at 10 after 5, and he only needs 20 minutes worth of a light. So he's going to be able to use a thinner candle or less oil. And clearly, the fellow who's lighting at 5:25, so he can use a birthday candle, in essence, that's going to give him the 5 minutes of candle or a few drops of oil, and that's going to give him the 5 minutes. So this has nothing to do with a minimum quantitative value of oil / candle, of wax. It has to do with the amount of time a person has to, it's a time framework of lighting the Hanukkah candles. Whereas if you say the second view, the shiura, this means that this is measured entirely by the object of amount of oil or thickness of a candle, if it's a wax candle, which means this is now a cheftza, it's a chefetz, it's an object viewpoint. And whether we're going to light on time or perhaps later on, against what the Rambam said, but perhaps we'll see that there is a possibility of lighting later on, you're still going to have a minimum quantitative value in the amount of oil or thickness of a candle, the shiura. Now let's see what the Tosfot has to say about this. Tosfot says, the e lo adlik, if I didn't light yet, so then go ahead and light. Avo mikan ve'elach, after you pass the time of tichle regel min ashuk, nobody's out there on the street, avar hazman, the time has passed. Omer hari porat, this is one of the Balei HaTosafot who we're not terribly familiar with, the yesh li zaher, you should be careful, uladlik balayla miyad, you should light immediately at the beginning of the night. Do not delay unnecessarily. Nevertheless, if you did delay, and it's already after the time framework of tichla rega min ashuk, yadlik misafek, you should light anyway during the course of the nighttime, as a suffek, as a doubt. And I believe what he means is without a bracha. Because when you do a mitzvah derabanan in a doubtful situation, you don't say the bracha. And the reason that he says you should do this is because the Gemara actually gives two answers. The answer of the Adlik Madlik and the Shiura, which suggests that you could be able to light even later on. But then the Tosfot says, Ulari, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, one of the great Balei HaTosfot, Nireh, believes, the Ata, in today's day and age, this is France, 12th century, in the 12th, 13th century in France, in Ashkenaz, we're not so careful when we light the candles. Why? We have no obvious publicity going on. It's only internally for the family. We do our candle lightings inside. Why do they light candles inside in France and Ashkenaz in the 12th century? Why didn't they light it by the door or by the open window opposite Rishut HaRabim, public property? because it was dangerous. And it's not an accident that that Hanukkah comes out in the season of the Christian holiday of December 25th. Matter of fact, Rabbi Yoel ben Nun has a whole shiur on this, that it's not an accident that there's December 25th and the 25th of Kislev. That also has to be discussed. We're not going to do this now, but there is some relationship there. The Gemara already talks about the fact that if it's days of great troubles and persecutions and so on, we didn't need to ignite anti-Semitic activity that in any way was there. And you don't have to, you know, pour fuel and add to the embers of burning anti-Semitism. So people actually lit indoors. And if all the Hanukkah candles in Ashkenaz in Europe in the Middle Ages was done indoors, then we don't even care anymore about Tichla Regel Min Ashuk, of people not being outdoors any longer, having come back from work. We're going to light indoors. And once you're lighting indoors, so the 5 p.m. is not relevant any longer. You can light at 7 p.m. and at 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. And as the Poskim point out, as long as there's at least one more person in the household who's still awake, then you can light with a bracha even at 2 in the morning. But if there's nobody awake and you're the last person or the only person there, and you didn't light Hanukkah candles, and there's really nobody out there on the street, then you light Hanukkah candles without a bracha. But the idea that you can light indoors became Ashkenazi practice until this very day. And indeed, when you go to Shulchan Aruch, in source number 5 on the second page, so while Rav Yosef Karo takes the stand of the Rambam, that Tichla Regel Min Ashuk, which is about a half an hour, She'az Ha'am Ovrim B'Shavim, the Ika Pirsuminisa, people are still out there walking by to and fro on the street, and there's publicity of the miracle. Hilkach, therefore, tzarich liten b'shemen kazeh hashiur. You have to make sure you have enough oil in there that's going to burn the distance. And he says that if you put more oil in there, then and it's after, and people are no longer on the street, you can blow out the candle if you want, and you can throw it away if you want. And you can use the light of that candle after the requisite time. If you want to read a book opposite that candle, that's okay. But then the Ramo says, Rav Moshe Isserles, this is already Krakow, 16th century, Yesh omrim, shebizman hazeh, in today's day and age, shem madlikim bifnim, we all light indoors. This is Poland, 16th century. Ein tzarich lizaher, we don't have to be so careful about the zman. Uladlik kodem shetichle regel min ashuk, we don't have to be so careful to light candles while people are still out there coming back from work. Umikol makom, he says, tov lizaher gam bamazman hazeh. Hey, you know, you should be careful even in today's day and age. It's good practice to light, you know, first opportunity. Umiyu, however, hanemili lechatchila. That means this is what we should be doing. But im avar zman ze v'loy dlik, if this time framework passed, it's 5:36, 7, 8. So madlik v'olech kol alayla, you can light the whole night. Im avar kol alayla v'loy dlik, you didn't light at nighttime, en lo tashlumim, there's nothing to do. You can't use another candle the next night. There's no makeups on not lighting candles. And then the Ramo says, uvalelot acherot yadlik kemo sha'ar b'nei adam, the next night you light just like everybody else. Even if he didn't light the first candle, then you light two the second night, and so on. And the Mishnah Berurah comes along, Chofetz Chaim, and he says that the idea of lighting specifically until the time of from Shkia, from sundown, until Tichla Regel Min Ashuk, ain't tzarich shemen liten shemen kol kach. You don't have to put much oil if 5 o'clock is sundown and you're lighting at 5:15. Then you only have to use half the amount of oil. Rak atche tichla regel min ashuv. And the Mishnah Berurah says, yeah, that's correct in the days of the Gemara, when the whole idea of the Pursum HaNes was for people in the public view outside. Ha'idna, today, the heker who rak the b'nei beito, again, this is the Chofetz Chaim in Radin, in Poland, saying that, today it's Belarus, saying that the whole Pursum HaNes is for internal family purposes. The olam ba'ish shi'ur hayadua, you always have to have the requisite amount, which has been established as a half an hour. Now let's take all this information and go back to our congealed butter story in the pot that was bisari, what was fleshik, and was fleshik bisari was cooked in it within the last 24 hours. So we said that this congealed butter in that pot what was created was meat and milk, basar b'chalav. You're not allowed to have any hana'ah, any benefit from it, and therefore you cannot use it for home illumination. But what about to use that that fat and put a wick in and use it for a Hanukkah candle? So we saw that there are possibly two opinions on the subject. One opinion says that even though mitzvot lav lehenot netnu, that you do, mitzvot weren't given for purposes of deriving benefit, nevertheless, it's, and therefore we would think that you would be able to use such a candle for Ner Hanukkah because it's being done in the performance of a mitzvah, even though it's a substance of basar b'chalav, meat and milk. Nevertheless, it's forbidden because of the consideration that Ner Hanukkah needs a shiur, a minimum quantitative value. And b'basar b'chalav, because it's asur b'na'ah, you have to destroy it. And if you destroy it, what kicks in is the halakha of kitute nichtet shiura. The shiur becomes crunched, because even though you didn't destroy anything yet. But the Gemara says, kolo medli saref kisaruf, something that halachically is on its way to be burnt and destroyed, as if it's burnt and destroyed already. So what's missing is the minimum quantitative value of that candle, of that schmaltz, of that fat from that butter, and therefore you can't use it. So this is in accordance with the view that says that it's mishiura, that you have to have at least a minimum quantitative value of a candle, no matter when you light. Even if you light later in the nighttime, it's got to be a half an hour. And to get a half an hour, that's determined by the thickness of a candle or the quantity of oil that you put into the Chanukiah. But the second opinion, that perhaps no, perhaps for Ner Chanukah, we would be able to use this because the consideration of Ketute Michtet Shira is not relevant here. Why would it not be relevant? Because according to the opinion of the Rambam, that has nothing to do with a minimum quantitative value. The concept of the half hour has to do with the person. He has a time framework of lighting candles from sundown until people have left the marketplace. And because that has nothing to do with the amount of oil or thickness of a candle, in reality, a person who lights at 5 o'clock until 5:30 is going to have X amount of oil or thickness of a candle. But if he lights at 5:15, his amount of oil is going to be half that because he doesn't need that much oil any longer. So there's no concept of a shi'ur. If there's no concept of a shi'ur, of a quantitative minimum quantitative value, then the din, the halakha of kitute michtet shi'ura, does not kick in at all. And what's left? What's left is mitzvot lav le'enot nidnu, that the mitzvah was not given for the purpose of gaining benefit. And he, in spite of the fact that this chema, this congealed butter in the meat pan that was ben yomo, is clearly asur b'ana'ah, and you cannot use it for home illumination, you would be able to use it for a Ner Hanukkah because I don't consider light doing performing a mitzvah as a benefit, as a hana'ah. So you see from this shaila that was asked a few hundred years ago in the day and age when people would use, you know, leftover fat to illuminate their homes in the nighttime, the shaila came up with regard to Hanukkah, with regard to home illumination. You don't need a posek to tell you that it's asur. But with regard to Ner Hanukkah, this becomes a detailed discussion about the nature of the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. Is it on the is the shiur, is the concept of Misha Tishka Chama Ad Shetich L'Regel Min Hashuk, is that something that's on the person, on the gavra, on the person who's lighting? Or is it on the heftza, on the object, which is the oil or the candle, and it has to have a minimum quantitative value? And this becomes like an exercise in halakha of really demonstrating how you have a interdepartmental type of discussion of Yoredeya and Orachayim all mixed together, Basa B'cholav issue with lighting, Chanukah lighting issue. And that's why in areas of halakha, you do have to develop some type of sensitivity to other areas of halakha in order to really get the whole picture. And I'm just going to conclude with a homiletic thought of Ad Shetich L'Regel Min Hashuk. But this I'm going to take credit for. It's a homiletic idea. And that is, today, there are two reasons that people go shopping. One is because they need something, right? They go to the grocery store, they go to a supermarket, because they need bread, they need milk, and they need all kinds of goodies for their house and for the children, and to give goodies to their grandchildren, and so on. That's why they go. They go to a furniture store because they need a new couch, and they need a new bedroom set, and whatever. And they go to this store and to that store. There are some people who really, thank God, don't need anything, and there's nothing on the agenda, nothing broke. Everything is fine. Everything looks nice. Everything aesthetic. Everything's up to date, but it's a sport to go shopping. As a matter of fact, El Al advertises that take a flight to Europe for 2 days for shopping, as we call it in Hebrew, shopping. And that's what you do. You just go from store to store, whether you buy or not buy, that's not even the issue. But you're looking at the window shopping, and you're comparing prices and so on. People get a kick out of it. It gives you something to do. For some people, it's downright entertaining. And people do these things. And then there's some people who actually go shopping because they're jealous of what the neighbors already have. Not that they need the newest style of something, but the neighbors bought it already. So therefore, I think I have to go buy it. I think I need a new dress. I think I need a new suit. I need new shoes. I need new that. Everything I need new. Why? I can't wear the old stuff. How can I go to a wedding wearing a dress that I wore already twice? You know, I have to have something new. People are going to see me, God forbid. And then they saw me at that wedding, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago. I was wearing that dress. How can you do that? So, and they feel this urge because of jealousy and keeping up with the Joneses, that they constantly in a mode of having being at the malls and being at the marketplaces and looking for all kinds of bargains. You know, people get a lot of kick out of that too, looking for bargains and so on. Chazal tell us the message of the Hanukkah candles is you start lighting it from sundown until you train your feet to leave the marketplace. Ad she'tichle regel min hashuk. You have to realize that consumerism is important, but up to a certain limit. If it gets out of hand, it becomes Hellenism. It becomes that which the Greeks extolled, the virtue of beauty and strength and so on. This is not Am Yisrael. Let's get that out of our system. Let's light the Hanukkah candles ad she'tichle regel min hashuk, until we recognize that when we're through shopping, we're out of there. And we're not there to look at every last store and try on every last thing because maybe it's going to be something nicer that somebody else will say, wow, you have the nicest suit in the world. You have the nicest shoes in the world and so on. That's not what it's all about. Hanukkah teaches us to rise above all that and recognize that our purpose in lighting the Hanukkah candles is to somehow reflect upon the Beit HaMikdash, which unfortunately does not exist, but Ramban tells us we continue lighting the candles in the spirit of the lighting of the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. And as Beit Hillel taught us, Ma'alim Bakodesh V'lo Moridim, we ascend the ladder of Kedusha as we continue from day one through day eight. And we should not put it at a premium, all the sideshows of Hanukkah, of eating latkes or jelly donuts, sufganiyot, in any shape or manner. That's not what it's all about. It's about the mitzvah of lighting the nerot, which we say, ha-nerot alalu kodeshem, ve'en lanu reshut l'shtamesh bahem, ela lirotam bilvad. Erev tov.
Thank you. Okay, I want to thank Maxine, who started the class I was teaching and whatever, but made it for the last part. I want to tell you, I hate shopping activities. I got other issues I could do, Tichle Regel Min Hashuk, but you don't have to worry that I'm going shopping. It's like, if I have to go, my God, you know, but okay. Anyway, but that's a beautiful word at the end. Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll please God see you next week. And I'll also be late next week, but okay. And tomorrow, our next year online, tomorrow night, actually, Dr. Moshe Sokolov continue with how Tanakh was put together. Then we have our two classes, of course, regular classes on Thursday, Shuli Mishkan doing medieval Israel. And the Parsha Shir this week is given by Rabbi Aaron Adler's brother, Rabbi Yossi Adler. Were you aware of that he was giving the Parsha Shir this week?
No, but I actually saw him giving a parsha shir, I think, for the rabbinic alumni of the Shiva of Reitz several weeks ago. But okay. I did not know that he was giving here for Torah and Notion.
Okay, you can come at 3:30 in the morning. 3:30 in the morning in Israel. 8:30, you don't have to come. Okay, I won't tell him I told you. 8:30 our time. We do it every Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. That's our regular time.
8:30
in the evening. In the evening, yeah. What can you do? You don't have to come. It's okay. I won't tell him I told you.
Look, if there's no Yankee game, so there's really no reason to get up at 3:30.
No Yankee. Oh, you were one of people who get up for the Yankee game at 3:30 in the morning? Yeah, you had to. The Super Bowl, you watched the Super Bowl?
No. There's nothing to watch. This year, there's not going to be nothing to watch.
Oh, are you a Giants fan or a Jets fan? Who do you like?
My brother told me the season ended already.
I'm sorry?
My brother told me the season ended already.
Yeah, you mean you're a Giants fan? Or Jets. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're the Giants or the Jets. The season is over. Right. That is correct.
Season's
right.
Over.
Right. Could I ask a question of Rev Adler?
Yes. Hi. Something important. Hi. I'm sorry we were talking about
that's like okay. Everything. Well, we were learning just before that everything teaches the history of the time that we're in. So this too tells the history of the time that we're in.
Sure.
But my question is this, Rabbi. On the concept of Kol Ha'omed Lisrof Samruf, it's as if it's burned. So I was thinking of in the Chumash, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And so she was tied to the stake. I mean, the Midrashim describe in detail when it says take her out, and when Yehuda said take her out and burn her, then the Midrashim, illuminate this. And there's one amazing Midrash. I wrote a book about this, which is why it's on my head all the time. My husband says, Sandra, are you ever going to stop thinking about this? And the answer is no. So when you talk about anything that's supposed to be burned that isn't burned, and he says, if it's burned, what does Sandra think? Oh, Tamar and you. But anyway, so one of the Midrashim, which is so amazing, it says that there she is. She's tied to the stake. Imagine the scene. The people who have the torches have them ready to light the kindling. She knows she's about to be killed. She really almost has no hope left. But then, says the Midrash, the runners come running in, because she had told them very early when they were taking her out of her house. She sent her runners out from her house and her maid, and she said, run to my house, bring up the wrapped simanim, the patil, the this, the that, wrap it up and bring it, but bring it wrapped, and don't open it till I say so. Mm-hmm. So they brought it back, and there she is, and it's like a tableau. She's ready to be burned. She's as if Saruf. Yehuda is arrogant, hasn't figured it out yet, and the servants are bringing it, and the Shamayim stops, and it says that the birds even stopped in the sky, and Shamayim is holding its collective breath. What is going to happen? Is she going to be Saruf? Is she not going to be Saruf? Is Yehuda going to get it? Is he not going to get it? And it doesn't matter if you read the Chumash 500 times in your life. You should look at it as if, oh my God, this is the moment. And then when he recognizes, when Tamar says in her riddle, without embarrassing him, if he who recognized, he to whom this belongs is the father of the child. And then the recognition, the hakara, comes to Yehuda, and then it stops. Was she Ke'il Saruf?
All right. I wouldn't carry it that far to think
okay.
Because this is a halakha that's stated with regard to certain areas about Kolomet Lisakel Kisakul, taking an animal that had to be stoned because it committed damage and killed somebody. So you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it because it's as if it's been stoned already. It's a halachic concept, but I wouldn't apply it here.
Okay.
Necessarily to the story.
The only reason I ask, I didn't really think that it was as if she was Saruf, but the concept of having pushed her life to the brink for a concept, for a purpose, and which raises her level of tzidkaniyot. That's why I asked it.
There is a concept with regard to the giving of malkot, the uncertain averot, where it's considered malkot bimkom mita omedet. The Gemara says the giving of malkot is tantamount, which means the person should see himself or herself as if having been executed, but God's giving you a second chance. And this is derived from Adam and Chava. The day that you eat from the fruit, you're going to die. Well, guess what? Adam lives another 930 years. That's not bad. And it was a life of suffering. So the suffering is like the Malkot. And the Gemara says that there's even a view in the Mishnah that you needed to judge somebody from Malkot in front of 23 judges, so he should be frightened out of his wits that this is really a capital punishment offense, even though they're going to allow him to get him a second chance. So the concept of ki'ilu, as if there is there in halacha. And I have to think it through with regard to Tamar, if there was any level of our being burnt, say. And that would be a nice follow-up.
Thank you very much. I think the ki'ilu is really hovering there. I think the ki'ilu is there, and that raises her level, perhaps, of righteousness.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I would say it applies by Yitzchak. Yitzchak is considered as if he had a and it clearly impacted his whole life. So in that sense, we do consider that on a certain level, Yitzchak was nekhar al gabei hamizbeach.
That's right. We consider Yitzchak as being, there's even a view that says he was nishchat and he came back with triat amitim, but that's a different shir. But that the fact that he was always considered the real akedah and not the ram. The ram was vaya'aleu le'ola tachat beno. The ram was brought in its place, and that's how we understand korbanot. Adam ki akriv mikem korban. The real sacrifice is the person who brings the korban, but the animal is just we call in baseball the designated hitter. It's just the substitute for the person. But the real korban is a person willing to give himself up. And the Rav always said that Judaism is a sacrificial religion. It demands sacrifice on so many different levels. And those who don't understand that, looking for convenience, then we're missing the point of what Yahadut Judaism is all about.
Thank you.
Very good. Yes, that 100%.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, everybody.
Hanukkah Sameach, everybody.
Hanukkah Sameach. That's right. Next week will be Mamash on Hanukkah. Ready? Right. Happy Thanksgiving, Rabbi Adler. I assume you have turkey on Thursday, no?
I don't make it, but somebody in the neighborhood actually invited me Thursday evening to such a meal.
And you can watch the football games.
He actually mentioned that too.
Okay.
But those are college games.
It's not Thanksgiving here. Canada, we don't, I'm just saying for the Americans out there.
I wrote in my book that the Rav had a Thanksgiving dinner.
Of course, that's well known.
And he believed that being patriotic.
Right. Dr. Mark spoke about that last night. He was speaking about that, Mark Shapiro. And of course, the Spanish and Portuguese shul has every year. There was just an article and Mayor Soloveitchik is going to, they have every year a special ceremony and other shuls used to have it. And he was saying, people said not to say tachanun ever on Thanksgiving. That's some people. Okay. No. There are all kinds of less good reasons people skip tachanun for.
Babichus didn't say it today.
Yes, the 19th of Kislev today. Yes. They have a yontif. But okay. All right, everybody, enjoy. We hope to see you soon, you and your friends, and have a wonderful day. And all right, bye-bye. Thanks. Okay.